Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time, rounding up all of the latest J2 and J3 news for you each week. I'm John Steele and I'm joined by, a fairly familiar voice. It's James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks John. How are you?
Yeah, very good, very good. Nice to finally talk, James. I know you had good chemistry with Stu when you debuted on the pod a couple of months back, so I hope we can sort of repeat that and do something similar this week.
Yeah, it was fun. I was a bit worried that you weren't going to invite me back because Stu said next time Kanazawa win, you'll have me on again. And to be honest, I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Well, yeah, look, just a little peep behind the curtain, James, we talked about it and we were waiting for Kanazawa to turn the corner and start winning to invite you back, but we just can't wait any longer. So, yeah, so welcome back and thanks for coming on at pretty short notice as well this week, it should be said. James, the Kanazawa chat is coming up later, but if it's okay with you this week, could you help me start the round 28 J2 review by talking about the top of the table, if that's all right? So mixed fortunes for the top two sides this week, I think it's fair to say. Leaders Iwata cruised to victory away at lowly Matsumoto, eventually winning 4-0. Sho Ito missed a decent chance to put Matsumoto ahead in this game in about the fifth minute, and Iwata went in front shortly after that. On 13 minutes, a shot from Kosuke Yamamoto took a deflection off the hapless Kyowan Hoshi and found its way into the back of the net via the post. This is exactly the kind of goal that you let in when you're down at the bottom of the table, isn't it? In the second half, Kotaro Omori hit the Matsumoto crossbar with a volley, and then he set up Yuki Otsu to rifle in a second goal for the visitors. That was just before the hour. And then a nice back heel from Otsu then freed Omori, who set up Lukian to make it 3-0. Right at the death, Shota Kaneko added a fourth goal from close range. He was set up by Daiki Ogawa. So yeah, Iwata cruising to a 4-0 win, really. The only potential downer for Iwata was an injury to Hiroki Yamada. He had to go off with his injury after about 70 minutes, and I'm not sure if they've released any news about that, how serious that might be. Second-placed Kyoto, James, they suffered a surprise 3-0 defeat away at Kofu over the weekend. In driving rain at the JIT Recycle Inc. Stadium, I love saying that, Kofu went ahead in the 32nd minute. A lovely cushion pass from Junma Miyazaki, a player making his first start of the season, set up Willian Lira, and he fired straight through Tomoya Wakahara in the Kyoto goal. Miyazaki, who had an extremely impressive match, it has to be said, he nearly made it 2-0 straight away, but his lob was off target. But midway through the second half, Miyazaki did get his goal, and it was an excellent one, a low drive from about 25 yards that arrowed into the bottom corner. And it was 3-0, 10 minutes before full-time, two substitutes combining as Ryotaro Nakamura crossed for Kazushi Mitsuhira to tuck the ball away from about 6 yards. Nakamura had a late chance to score a fourth goal for Kofu, but fired into the side netting. So yeah, finished Kofu 3 Kyoto 0. Fantastic win for Kofu, only really marred by the news that was announced a few days before the game. Jin Izumisawa, one of the star attackers, is going to miss the rest of the season. He'll be out for about 6 months with an injury. But surprise defeat for Kyoto in that one. But Kyoto had a very quick chance to kind of put that behind them. Kyoto played their rearranged match from round 25 on Tuesday evening this week, a midweek game away at Matsumoto. And a cracking match eventually finished 2-2. Matsumoto took a shock lead in the 11th minute with a bit of help from Kyoto's keeper Wakahara. Serginho clipped a ball over the top for Shuto Kawai to chase. Wakahara, perhaps unwisely, came rushing out of his goal about 45 yards and missed the ball. Kawai had the simple task of slotting the chance into the unguarded net. So Matsumoto surprisingly 1-0 up early on. Kyoto were level 10 minutes later though. Kosuke Shirai crossed to the back post where Takumi Miyayoshi was waiting to send a header into the roof of the net for 1-1. Matsumoto came again though, and they were back in front in the 33rd minute. Serginho again the provider with a deep cross from the right that was headed in from close range by Sho Ito. Kyoto got a second equaliser 6 minutes into the second period. Beautiful technique from Miyayoshi to guide a header into the far corner from a cross from Kyohei Kuroki. So yeah, this game quite exciting midweek fare. I think, James, it finished Matsumoto 2, Kyoto 2. I think you'd have to say it's a good point for Matsumoto because it ends a run of three straight defeats and some pretty dreadful performances. Yeah, I think we can probably wrap these games up together, can't we? Matsumoto 0, Iwata 4, Kofu 3, Kyoto 0, and Matsumoto 2, Kyoto 2. We can talk more about Matsumoto later in part 2, James, but Iwata seemed to be marching on at the top of the table for Kyoto. Two away games in quick succession and only 1 point. It's a bit of a surprise. What did you make of these games?
Yeah, well, the Iwata 4, Matsumoto 0, that was not a surprise at all. And I don't think there's really much to say about it from an Iwata perspective. They were really good and, you know, still top, still doing what they're doing. Especially that second goal, Olta's goal. He had so much space just running down the middle. It was ridiculous. But yeah, they're really good. That Kofu 3, Kyoto 0, there was a surprise. I know Kofu are a consistent kind of top six team, but just to see Kyoto lose 3-0 was unexpected. I think it's hard to tell, but if that's it was just one of those nights for Kyoto, or whether it's the start of a kind of an iffy run, especially bearing in mind the 2-2 with Matsumoto on Tuesday night, twice going behind. And then I watched that one in full. The second half, it was all Kyoto basically camping out in Matsumoto's half, but they couldn't find a way through. And I think partly that was because things just weren't working for them, didn't click. And partly it was because Matsumoto actually defended really well. They had a bit of luck, but sometimes you need that. But they were pretty solid in the second half defensively. In particular, I thought Yota Shimokawa did well after he came on as a sub. Yeah, Kyoto dropping points there, it especially to Kofu, it kind of opens, maybe does it open the door for the chasing pack? Or are they too far behind? It's hard to tell, really.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We should probably come on and talk about the de facto chasing pack in a moment. I think you're right to say with Iwata, we didn't really learn anything new to take away from sort of drubbing a hapless opponent at the weekend. For Kyoto, I think the fact that they're just conceding a lot of goals is probably where they're going to be concerned. I think I tend to agree that I don't think 1 point from two away games is not a disaster when you consider how many points they have in the bank already. But I think if you're Cho Kui-je, you're going to be concerned that they're, you know, five goals conceded across those two games is going to be a bit of a worry. And I would suggest, I kind of alluded to it in the roundup, but I think Tomoya Wakahara, the goalkeeper, is not having the best of times right now. He's fairly young by J League standards. He's clearly a very good goalkeeper, but he did have a similar kind of dip in form towards the tail end of last season, when I think basically the rest of the Kyoto squad did as well. So perhaps it was hidden a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised. No, I don't presume to tell Cho Kui-je how to manage a professional football team, but I wonder if there might be a goalkeeping change coming up for the next game, just to give Wakahara a little bit of a rest, you know, take him out of the firing line for a game or two. But yeah, we'll see. And yeah, Matsumoto showed quite a lot of grit, didn't they? Quite a lot of determination, and they will certainly need a lot of that over the next few games to try and get out of the mess they've got themselves into. So yeah, James, the chasing pack then. So right at the top of the table, obviously, we have leaders Iwata, they're on 59 points, second place Kyoto on 58. Now, there's a 7-point gap back to third placed Niigata, and they drew 0-0 at home with another relegation dogfighter, Kita Kyushu, at the weekend. As you'd expect, I suppose, Niigata were well on top for the majority of this game. Kita Kyushu's goalie, Yuya Tanaka, had to make good saves from Romero Frank in the first half, and Kaito Taniguchi in the second. Niigata probably came closest to winning this when Yoshiaki Takagi sent in a cross that was mishit and bounced off the top of the crossbar towards the end of the first half. So not a great deal to report on in terms of goalmouth action, but it finished 0-0. Kita Kyushu obviously will be delighted with the point, but Niigata's poor recent form continues, doesn't it? Just one win from their last six matches now. Not exactly chasing pack you know, material. Level on points with Niigata are fourth placed Ryukyu, but their form is also a bit concerning. They were comprehensively beaten 3-1 away at Nagasaki at the weekend. Nagasaki scored twice in the last 6 minutes of the first half to go in 2-0 up at half time. The first goal came after Lee Yong-jik was penalised for a handball in the penalty area and Edgar Junior rifled in the spot kick. It's the type of penalty that I always think is a bit harsh because Lee was just trying to block a shot and, you know, he's a human being with arms and the ball hit one of his arms, but what can you do? Those are the rules. And then Edgar Junior was the key man in a flowing move that led to the second goal. He played a sharp 1-2 with Seiya Maikuma, and then Maikuma's low cross was swept home by Takashi Sawada from close range. Nagasaki killed this game with a third goal less than 30 seconds into the second period. Ryukyu actually had the kickoff at the start of the second half, got themselves into all kinds of trouble in possession, and eventually Edgar Junior's flicked ball into the box was volleyed home expertly by Ken Tokuda. After that, Edgar Junior nearly scored a fourth goal himself, but was denied. And then at the other end, Nagasaki's keeper Masaya Tomizawa made a good stop from Koya Kazama. Ryukyu did manage to get a consolation goal back in the 75th minute through Shintaro Shimizu. This was after some good work in the build-up from Takuma Abe, who drew the goalkeeper, then slipped the ball to Shimizu. But yeah, finished Nagasaki 3, Ryukyu 1. So yes, some more bad news for Ryukyu coming out of this game, James. I seem to be doing a lot of injury news this week for some reason. But yeah, two important defenders, Tetsuya Chinen and Keita Tanaka. It's been announced that they're both out for the rest of the season. So yeah, problems kind of stacking up for Ryukyu at the moment, you could say. And I'll just mention one more team before I come back to you, James. Yamagata's hopes of mounting a serious promotion challenge seem more remote than ever now. This is after they were beaten 1-0 at home by Mito. As usual, from their recent form, Mito just came out firing on all cylinders in this game. There were chances for Kai Matsuzaki, Shota Fujio, and Masato Nakayama all in the first sort of 20 minutes. Fujio's chance came after a pretty comical misjudgment of the flight of the ball by Victor in the Yamagata goal. Now, he's an excellent keeper, so it's not often that you see him sort of heading in the wrong direction, which is what happened here. Nakayama, though, did put Mito ahead midway through the first half when he neatly collected a pass from Ryo Nisato and then fired the ball into the far corner. There were chances for both teams after that. This was the game that I said would be like 3-3 or 3-2, by the way, James, last week. It didn't happen. It was Mito who came closest to scoring again when a curling effort from Matsuzaki came back off the face of the crossbar. But yes, in the end, it finished with a Mito win. Yamagata now 12 points adrift of the promotion places. We should say they have a game in hand, but yeah, their kind of imperious form is dented a little bit now. I think that's two straight defeats, isn't it? So, James, Niigata 0, Kita Kyushu 0, Nagasaki 3, Ryukyu 1, and Yamagata 0, Mito 1. What are we to make of this chasing pack?
They're not really chasing as such, are they? They're kind of like hobbling along, trying to keep Iwata and Kyoto within sight. In Niigata, because they had such a good start to the season and then they fell away a bit, but I think they really need to regain control soon, they're only 7 points back and they're still third, but their chance of reaching the top two is gonna disappear if they don't. And so yeah, 0-0 with Kitakyushu is not particularly impressive on the face of it, but when you consider they lost 4-0 the week before, it's not so bad. But also if Kyoto keep dropping points, then maybe Niigata can catch them. So they're still in with a shout. But Kitakyushu, they're 4 games unbeaten now, so that's not bad. For Nagasaki and Ryukyu, Nagasaki have just kind of been quietly going about their business, haven't they? I don't think that they will really trouble the top two, but they'll stay up, you know, top six-ish. Ryukyu, seems every week that I see a tweet from Jeff Osborne, Okinawa Aussie, about another injury at Ryukyu. And like you said, losing Chinen and Tanaka, they're two really important players for them. So that's, especially when defensively Ryukyu have not been great anyway, even when at full strength, if they've even been at full strength. I haven't for a while. But they, I think the fact that they're still in fourth and only 7 points off Kyoto in second with such a massive injury list is testament to their, I guess their kind of their mental strength they have this year. Last year they finished quite low down. The year before that they fell away quite drastically after a good start. So it's pleasing to see them hanging in there. But I only watched the highlights of that game, and I was quite amused that in the DAZN highlights there were no highlights before the 35th minute, which made me laugh. And there were some pretty good moments in there. I really liked the pass for Ryukyu's goal, Abe's pass, where his left foot was kind of sliding out from underneath him as the goalkeeper was sliding into him, but he still managed to square it with the outside of his right foot. That was a really, really good good play. But, yeah, too little, too late. They've got a habit, haven't they, Ryukyu? A habit of conceding straight after a restart. Like, was it? I think it was against Omiya and Akita. They conceded immediately after scoring. This one they conceded straight after the kickoff for the second half. But it's that kind of stuff that's going to prevent them, and the injuries, prevent them from getting up into the promotion spots, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think with Ryukyu, we kind of have this, we can spin it both ways. I think for me, you know, Yasuhiro Higuchi, he's in with a shout for sort of coach of the season in J2, because as you say, the improvement from last season is massive. But at the same time, I think, you know, there are no playoffs, obviously, this year. So the top two is the everything. And I agree with you that they're not quite gonna make it. So it's sort of a weird, a much improved season where they've been for large stretches of it excellent, but at the same time there's going to be perhaps a little bit of disappointment that they weren't quite, you know, didn't quite have enough to get into the top two. But then again, I'm sort of writing them off, and there's still plenty of, you know, points available, isn't there? There's still lots of games left, so they could do it. I think. Yeah, in terms of, I think the centre-back position is always where they've had trouble. You mentioned that defensively, even at full strength, they're not always convincing. And I think they're one of these teams where it's sort of more dangerous to them if they have possession in their back four, if that makes sense. You know, so I think if you watch just that 30-second passage from the kickoff of the second half, where they're kind of, the body language is very sort of like training session. And I think once they realise that they've been pressed up to the, you know, the edge of their own penalty area, and they don't really have an out ball. And I don't want to pick on Lee Yeon-jae, because I think centre-back's not his best position, and it's pretty well known. But if you have someone playing at centre-back who is not a natural centre-back, maybe don't put them under pressure, you know, straight from the kickoff by giving them the ball. That would be my takeaway. But I'm doing a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking here, James. I'm sure these professional managers know a lot more than me. But yeah, do you think that's right then? What about Yamagata? Because they were making this concerted push, weren't they, to kind of get into the conversation for the top two, and then they've that kind of red hot streak's finished now. Do you think, along with, for me, I think Nagasaki and Yamagata have left it too late now, and they're not going to trouble the top two. But did you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, last time I was on, I just seen Yamagata beat Kanazawa 4-1, and they were in the middle of that really good run. And I thought that, yeah, if they keep doing that, then they'll definitely put themselves up with a chance. But since the break, they've stalled a bit, haven't they? So there's a draw and two losses. They're 12 points back from Kyoto, which I think probably is too much. And they've got a really tough week coming up, because they've got Niigata away on Saturday, Nagasaki away on Tuesday, and then Kyoto at home the following Saturday. So that's basically going to decide their season, really, isn't it? It's strange. Maybe the break kind of took away that momentum they had, because they were really on a roll, weren't they?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's that situation where they were always going to kind of stop winning at some point. And it really, it always depends how quickly you can kind of get back on the horse, doesn't it, when that happens. And they do seem to have, I think you said, stalled. And I think that's fair. And I think if they come out of this very tough week that they've got coming up, as you mentioned, if they haven't got a win from any of those three fixtures, then it becomes, you know, no wins in six, and then they're on a run. They're on a sort of a run of the other kind, aren't they? They go from a winning streak to a not winning streak, and we know how hard they can be to get out of, James, as we'll perhaps talk about later. So I'm starting to feel like the top four looks pretty set to me at the moment. But then we you know, Kofu been in reasonably good form recently. They could threaten, and I think we're going to talk about Machida a little bit later. I think we're going to move Machida to part two this week. But they've also been in pretty impressive form, haven't they? But I think, to be honest, James, with my sort of J2 supporter hat on, the relegation battle is probably the more interesting story just at the moment, isn't it, in the table? So if you're okay with the top half, should we take a quick break, and then when we come back we can get all your thoughts on what is quite frankly carnage at the other end of the table? Does that sound all right?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, good. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about the relegation dogfight. Welcome back, everyone. James and I have had a quick comfort break, and we're back to talk about the J2 relegation dogfight as it stands after 28 rounds. James, 5 points are separating the bottom nine teams at the moment. It's pretty chaotic, to say the least. There was a superb win at the weekend for the bottom side, Sagamihana. They triumphed 1-0 at home to Jeff Chiba, of course, thanks to a goal from a defender, Seiji Kimura, right at the end of the game. Horrible wet weather at Gion Stadium for this one. Jeff's Asahi Yada had a couple of first half chances, the first of which was extremely well saved by Akihiko Takeshige in the Sagamihara goal. But this game was pretty low on incident. It seemed to be heading for a 0-0 draw until the 86th minute, when Kimura rose highest to meet Shingo Hyodo's corner and power his header in off the crossbar for the vital goal. Now, Sagamihara, an important win for them, just one defeat in their last nine matches. Takuya Takagi going there as coach seemed like a strange choice at the time, but they might actually survive at this rate if they keep up posting results like this. Ehime are down to second bottom in the standings at the moment. This is after a 0-0 draw away at Okayama. Very entertaining match, as far as I could see from the highlights, James. Ehime had a chance cleared off the line inside the first 10 minutes, which would have given them a real boost had it gone in. And there was an absolutely astonishing save from the Okayama keeper, Togo Umeda. Virtually the very last action of this match at the end of the second half, he just took off to get his hand to a close-range header from Shoji Toyama, who just looked absolutely shell-shocked, couldn't believe that he hadn't scored. So yeah, 0-0 that game. Maybe we should mention there was no Mitch Duke for Okayama due to the international break, and he's away with Australia, so that blunted their attack a little bit. So we mentioned Matsumoto and Kitakyushu in part one. The relegation zone sounds like this from bottom to top at the moment. Sagamihara 24 points, Ehime 25, Kitakyushu also on 25, and then Matsumoto on 26. James, Omiya a level on points with Matsumoto, but a whopping 20 goals better off on goal difference. Omiya are sitting just outside the drop zone in 18th place. This is after their second straight win, beating Tokyo Verdy 2-1 at home this time. Omiya very quick out of the blocks in this one, with Atsushi Kawata putting them ahead in just the 11th minute with a typically composed finish from about 14 yards. And it was 2-0 before the break. A long ball over the top caught out the Verdy back line. It wasn't really much of a line, has to be said. The goalkeeper Mateus was able to block a shot from Shinsuke Kikuchi, but Kanji Okunuki was on hand to tuck in the loose ball for a very important second goal. Kikuchi nearly made it 3-0 before the break with a spectacular diving header, but he was off target. Now, it's Omiya we're talking about, James. So naturally, after completely dominating the first period and winning the game in 45 minutes, they gave Verdy a goal back straight after the restart to make things exciting. Ryota Kajikawa squared the ball for a completely unmarked Ryuji Sugimoto to clip the ball past Yuta Minami. So Verdy had some hope 3 minutes into the second period. Almia held firm, just about, but Verdi almost equalised right at the death when Mizuki Arai hit the crossbar. This was in the fifth minute of stoppage time at the end of the second period. Verdi also had a very dodgy penalty claim after this, which was clearly a dive, so no penalty given. And yeah, we should mention, I don't know if it came up on the pod last week, so I'll mention it now, the Verdi boss, Hideki Nagai, has gone. He's resigned before the kind of findings of the power harassment investigation at Verdi have been officially published. So Takafumi Hori is now in temporary charge. This was his first match taking charge of the team. And with them kind of safe in mid-table, we can probably expect Hori to stay in charge until the end of the season, at least, I would think. So, James, yeah, Sagamihara 1, Jeff Chiba 0, Okayama 0, Ehime 0, Omiya 2, Tokyo Verdy 1. What did you notice from these three games?
They're all, what you got, three relegation-threatened teams and three kind of plodding away in mid-table. One thing I noticed about all three of those relegation-threatened teams, they all changed their managers, didn't they? Earlier in the season, Ehime, Sagamihara and Omiya. And for a while, we were all thinking, why? Because we hadn't seen any tangible evidence of an improvement in results. But it seems like it's finally coming for all three of them. That for Omiya, that's the first time they've had consecutive wins this season. And it's the first time they've been out of the relegation zone since match day 14. Yeah, so this is great stuff for them. They're finally getting a bit of luck as well. Like they did in the 96th minute. I think there was a Verdi shot hit the crossbar or something. So it's a great time for them to start putting results together and getting some luck go their way. Yeah, for Sagamihara, again, we all thought that they were dead and buried. But I was wondering, because last year you said in the promotion race, they just kind of steadily kept going and snuck in at the end to take second spot. You think they might be able to do that with the relegation battle and just kind of steadily keep going and sneak out right at the end?
Yeah, well, it's starting to look that way. I mean, I think the only mark against them right now, I mean, it's very, very harsh to be critical after they've put together such a good recent run. They just don't score enough goals, I don't think. And I think in the final analysis after 42 games, the team that scores the fewest goals is probably going to be in the bottom four, I think. So they really need to score a few more goals, in my opinion. Having said that, if they keep clean sheets, then they can grab one goal. You know, they're gonna get enough points. So we kind of had this discussion with Sean last time where he was saying he thinks Yamaguchi will be fine. And I kind of agree. But I think they've scored really few goals as well. And they're similar to Sagamihara. So why do I think Yamaguchi will be okay and Sagamihara not? I'm not sure. Well, yeah, to be honest, I think it could be on. I mean, the bottom of the table right now, but they're only a point adrift of other teams, and it's so tight, as we mentioned. They could just do it. I think the guys that they brought in and the transfer window, Kaoru Takayama, for example, and one or two others, they've really given them something a little bit extra up front. And I think Takagi's kind of seen through a couple of players like Ajinor, the goalkeeper, and Kunde. I don't mean to single out Brazilian players necessarily, but they were foreign and exotic, but they weren't adding anything to the team, really. So yeah, I think they've improved a lot over the course of the season. They've got a fighting chance. And yeah, I was very wrong about them last season in terms of getting promoted from J3. So I'm eager not to be left looking silly again. So I'll give them a puncher's chance, James. How about that?
Yeah. Well, and also I think in terms of the manager things, I was thinking that it could be like when Roy Hodgson took over at Fulham in the Premier League back in the 2007-2008 season. They were way, way adrift at the bottom. They had a really bad start under him. But then their last five or six games, they suddenly started winning and they won on the final day to somehow stay up. So for these three teams, Sagamihara, Ehime and Omiya, that have changed their managers, surely at least one of them is going to have that great escape. Because although they're all, actually most of the teams in the bottom nine are starting to put together results. Even Matsumoto, they lost consecutive games 4-0, but they are occasionally winning or they're getting a good draw against the likes of Kyoto. Kitakyushu are unbeaten in four now. Ehime, Sagamihara, Omiya are all putting together some decent runs. For Sagamihara, yeah, they don't score much, but it helps when you're playing against teams like Jeff, who are just doing Jeff things, like having loads of chances for the first hour and then conceding a late goal.
I think they are very much the opponent you would, even with this kind of new, more steely Jeff under under Yoon Jung-kwan, they're still capable of being a very accommodating opponent, aren't they?
Yeah.
when they turn up at your stadium. So yeah, I don't know. Well, which of these teams would you give the best chance to, James? Sagamihara, Ehime, Omiya? You'd have to say it's Omiya who've got the best chance of staying up, wouldn't you, just with the squad?
I think so. I think Omiya with their squad, and also now they've got Kawata, who they brought in midway through the season, didn't they? He's scoring goals, and some of them, when they're not disallowed incorrectly, he's scoring goals, and that's what's helped them to turn around. They before they started winning again, they were drawing a lot. So remember, a few weeks ago, I think you were talking on the pod about they're drawing, but it's not enough. They've got to turn them into wins. They're starting to do that now. They've managed to haul themselves out of the bottom four, be it on goal difference, but that doesn't matter. They're out of the bottom four. And I think, although I watched the last 30 minutes of this live, and they had a few lucky escapes, and they hung on, but they hung on. And that's the important thing, isn't it? When you're down there, you've got to take what you can. So I think, yeah, Almir are in the best position for me out of those teams.
Confirmation that Omiya players listen to the pod. I'll take
Yeah,
it.
they should.
Yeah, well, everybody should. Everybody should. Yeah, I think as well. Ehime, kind of a weird day at the office for them, because I think ordinarily a clean sheet and a point away from an away game at Okayama's good going. But they had some great chances to score, and I think one goal might have been enough for them to get all 3 points, and especially that late chance from Toyama, who. How the goalkeeper who made a save that I just will never know, but it's an incredible save to protect a point for Okayama. So Ehime, weird situation where they've played really well and got a good point but gone down the table. But I wouldn't rule them out either. I think they can be terrible. They can be really good, but they have a lot of experienced players. And also, as a club, if you subscribe to any kind of theory of, like, club memory, they're often in this position, aren't they? Going
Yeah.
into the last of the season, so that I think there's enough there for me to say that I still think I give Omiya the best chance along with you. I'd say Ehime 50-50. Sagamihara, it really could go either way, but I think if you'd offered them with 2/3 of the season to go, you're 2 or 3 points from safety. I think with the squad that they had at the start of the season, they'll consider that a pretty good position to be in, I would suggest. Okay, yeah, James, I'm going to move you on to the well, I don't know, relegation dogfight continuing, I guess. 1 point and one place above Omiya in 17th are Zweigen Kanazawa, with a game in hand, we should say, but not in the best of form, are they? They were soundly beaten 4-0 at home by a very impressive Machida Zelvia. At the weekend, Machida pretty much had this game won inside the first 30 minutes, didn't they? Thanks to fine goals from outside the penalty area from Kaishu Sano, Yuki Nakashima, and Shusuke Ota. Sano and Nakashima's goals, the first and the second, came within about 2 minutes of each other in a kind of hammer blow for Kanazawa. Chong Tizzy came on as a late substitute for Machida, and he won a penalty after being brought down, not maliciously but clumsily, by Gaku Inaba. And Tizzy stepped up to score the penalty himself. So Machida are a pretty good team, James. There's no shame in losing to them at all. But I think, just based on the highlights I saw, Kanazawa just made it a bit too easy for them on the day. And I believe that's 9 games without a win now for Masaki Yanagishita, the Kanazawa manager. James, we should have mentioned at the top of the pod, and I completely forgot, you're at Kanazawa Dreaming on Twitter, which tells us where your allegiances lie. What did you make of this game, but Kanazawa more generally?
I think I'm going to be at Kanazawa moaning for a bit. This game was more of the same that we've been, at least for the last the last 10, last 8 or 9 or 10 games or so, but the whole season generally, except for that really good start. We start really slowly. In this case, the game was over in 30 minutes, like you said. All three of those goals came through the middle, or at least the shot was from the middle. and the initial work was down the left, which is different actually, because in previous games, a lot of the goals have come because defenders have stopped paying attention to a man at the back post. So a bit of variety, I suppose. But it doesn't look great when your marking is so bad that the man in the middle has so much time to turn or to run and shoot. Crosses, when we do finally attack, the crosses always get cleared by the nearest defender, which is incredibly frustrating. We seem to be unable to pass from the midfield to the strikers. We can't do any of those through balls or balls over the top. The back four can pass nicely between themselves, and we look really good when they're doing that. And they pass it out to the wide men. There's nowhere to go, so they pass it back and pass it across and try the other side. And our possession stats and passing stats look pretty good, but there was nothing in this game in particular. But generally, there's nothing going forward. The defending for the penalty was just hapless, really. That happened a couple of weeks ago when we lost to that stoppage time penalty to Iwata. It's the same kind of thing. Striker running kind of away from the goal was knocked over on the edge of the box. And I mean, even when we do create chances, we don't look like scoring. Oishi had a decent chance on the edge of the area, I think about 35 minutes in, but his shot was basically straight at the keeper. And that was it for our chances. Our attack is anemic at best. Even the creativity of Shimada has dried up and nothing's really working. There were some positives. In the second half, at left back, we had a youngster called Nagamine making his debut, and he did all right. I saw a stat from, I think it was from Football Lab or something on Twitter, that he made 3 out of 3 successful tackles, which, I mean, you've got to grab whatever positives you can when you're in Kanazawa's situation. Goto in goal was as good as you can be when you've got such a poor team in front of you. He's been the best performer, I think, for Kanazawa this year. And Ishio came back into the starting lineup at centre back. I didn't realise that he'd been injured until Sean mentioned it on last week's pod, but it didn't really make any difference because the central defence was rubbish. So, I mean, it's nice to see him back because I think he's really good, but just nothing worked. And it was all over in half an hour.
I think I'm anxious that we should give Machida some credit for kind of a sharpshooting
Really good.
display, yeah, because we tend to, just in the last couple of weeks, Machida have like drubbed sort of relegation dogfight teams, and we've ended up focusing on the drubby rather than the drubber. So yeah, well done to Machida, and I do think that kind of exciting midfield that they have has been really, really good to watch in the last month or so. I actually really hope they can keep those players for next season, because as we talked about in part one, I don't think they can perhaps challenge the top two this year, but next year could be a really good a really exciting season for them. It's a big week for Kanazawa, isn't it, as well, James, because we've got, just looking ahead, it's Kita Kyushu away at the weekend, and then a midweek game and also away at Yamaguchi. So kind of a six pointers wherever you look. How concerned are you about Kanazawa at this point? I mean, is it just a blip? I mean, 9 games without a win, is that just a blip and they'll be okay, or is it time to seriously worry?
It's not just those 2 games. After that, we've got Matsumoto at home the following Sunday, so it's a huge, huge week. And it's not. You can't say 9 games is a blip. I don't think it's too long for that. And this kind of stuff was happening before this really bad run started. Yeah, we haven't won since match day 18, and we've had 2 nil-nil draws, but the rest have been losses. I think I said all this before when I was on the pod, but it's still true. We have the most goals conceded in the opening 15 minutes of games. That's 10 now. And that's nine. There are 9 times where we've basically given the opposition an early head start. And of those 9 games, we've only won one and drawn one. So you can't expect to win when you put yourself in such a difficult situation so early in the match. And even if it's not an early goal, but we still concede first, we've got 12 losses, a draw, and a win. So, I mean, I don't. Things are not looking good. This kind of inexorable slide. We were third at one point early in the season, about 5 or 6 games in, and now we're a point outside And we could be in the relegation zone by Saturday night.
We've done well because we've talked for 10 minutes without mentioning Shion Niwa or Yuji Senuma.
Well, it's because they were anonymous. And it's not through the lack of trying. They're still trying to, still trying to make their runs. They're still trying to show for the ball, but the passes are not coming. And so they're not getting the chances. And that's because, I don't know, if it's the players don't have the ability, or if it's the tactics, or if it's the players that are being selected. We've tried so many different players on the left wing, but none of them have really worked. I mean, the other strugglers, like we've already said, the other struggling teams are starting to get results. They're picking up draws and the occasional win. Even Matsumoto won a few weeks ago, but Kanazawa are not. And if they don't start soon, especially this coming week, we're going to find ourselves in deep, deep trouble.
Pressure is ramping up, isn't it, week by week at the bottom. Yeah, I did see, I think maybe you must have retweeted it because I'm not sure how it would have come up on my timeline otherwise, but there was a kind of Kanazawa supporters blog, and the title was "Is Shion Niwa Useless?" And of course, I couldn't click on it out of loyalty to old Shion there. But yeah, I wonder if that's a kind of prevailing view or predominant view amongst Kanazawa fans that the system. I think the system doesn't suit him. Maybe was the point.
Yeah, it was the you're right. The article was he's not. The conclusion was he's not. It's just that things aren't working. Well, they were working earlier in the season. They're not working now. Also, we mentioned that other teams down the bottom have strengthened quite a lot. Kanazawa brought in one young player from J1 on loan, Hiramatsu from Shonan. But apart from that, did no business except sending Raisei Shimazu to Kagoshima and Ryo Kubota to Gifu. I don't know if it's just me, but that's one of the big complaints I have this season, is that those two lads, Shimazu and Kubota, were so good last year, and this year they've hardly been seen. They've been sent out on loan, but the amount of different players we've tried on the wing that haven't worked, why are they not being tried? I'm sure there must be a reason for it, but we don't know what it is.
It might be a non-footballing reason, as you know, with exactly. Masaki Yanagishita, perhaps not the. It can be a bit chippy, a bit difficult to get along with. Would you say? I feel like if you fall out with him, maybe it stays that way. And I think sending out players on loan who are good enough to play in your first team, I think that's fine if you're doing well. But optically, it looks bad when the team's struggling, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that this is their third year at Kanazawa, so I wouldn't be surprised if they signed a three-year contract out of university, and then sending them out on loan is basically a chance to say, you know, put them in the shop window because they're going to need to find a new club for next season. Which, if it's true, I'll be really disappointed because they were both excellent last year, and they've got a lot of potential, and they could definitely still do a job in J2.
Put Jeff on red alert for snapping these players up.
I hope they don't do the career suicide that is moving to Jeff.
Okay, James, I think that might be enough therapy for this week. If you're okay,
I do want to say that matches were really good, especially down the left. Kai Miki and Shusuke Ota did all the damage down the left. They were really, really good. It wasn't all that Kanazawa were rubbish. It was the match that played really well, especially at the start, and they blew us away.
Yeah, well, I think we had a similar discussion when it was, Matsumoto nil Iwata 4, for example, of like how it becomes very difficult to analyse either side. Because the one team played very poorly and one team played very well. But I think, yes, with Machida, I think the only regret for them will be if they could have got this kind of form a couple of months earlier, maybe by Golden Week in May, if they'd been playing like this, then they could have had a real shout. I mean, they could still challenge at the very top. I think they've left it just a bit too late to kind of really click this season. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, fair play to Machida. That was a deadly display of accurate shooting. And it's in J2 that they are few and far between. So we should celebrate that for sure. James, two more matches to run through before I let you get back to work today. Staying with the relegation dogfight, if you like, there was a huge home win for Tochigi They beat fellow strugglers Yamaguchi 3-2 at home with a kind of a summer transfer window signing Yohei Toyoda scoring twice. Toyoda put Tochigi in front in fairly unusual circumstances in just the fourth minute in this game, with Tochigi's Kotaro Arima going clean through. Yamaguchi keeper Kentaro Seki came out to confront him and blocked the shot, but then stayed down injured. The ball ran loose, and when it was looped back into the penalty area, Toyoda was on hand and he nodded into the unguarded net. So 1-0 in kind of strange circumstances, really, early on. Seki was actually unable to continue and he was replaced by Daisuke Yoshimitsu after about 10 minutes. Yamaguchi were level though midway through the first half thanks to Yuki Kusano. He latched onto a long ball from Hiroto Ishikawa and then coolly fired past Paul Obina Obi in the Tochigi goal. And Kusano could have put Yamaguchi ahead early in the second half, but he fired wide from the edge of the 6-yard box after he'd done most of the hard work in generating the opportunity. Tochigi retook the lead in the 55th minute with Tepe Yachida dinking a lovely cross to the back post, and Toyoda did what he does best, James, heading the ball back across goal into the far corner. It's hard to think of a player you'd want other than Toyoda on the end of a chance like that, isn't it, for your team. The home side then went 3-1 up thanks to a very unlikely source in the 73rd minute there. Centre-back and captain Yasutaka Yanagi fired in a low 20-yard shot that seemed to surprise Yoshimitsu on its way into the back of the net. I don't know what it is with their centre-back scoring crazy long-range goals, because Ryoji Fukui did it for Riku last week as well, and that was a bit of a shock. So seems to be catching on. Late on, Yamaguchi got a goal back after a nice passing triangle left their young striker Kota Kawano free on the edge of the 6-yard box, and he fired into the roof of the net emphatically to make it 3-2, but that's how it finished. I think for Yamaguchi, they started with Kazuma Takai on the bench for this game, which seems like a strange call in retrospect. Tochigi and Yamaguchi, they're level on 29 points in 14th and 15th in the table respectively. Yamaguchi do have a game in hand, but I'm not sure how much good it will do them because they're on a run of 3 defeats in 4. Whereas Tochigi have suddenly got their stuff together, haven't they? It's 1 defeat in 5 for them. And James, before I come back to you, the last game from round 28 involved Akita. They took a huge step towards J2 survival by beating Gunma 1-0 at home, a first win in 7 matches for them. Akita scored right at the death in the 95th minute in a goal-mouth scramble following a corner. So it's like a Siri, show me a stereotypical Akita goal. That's probably what would come up on your phone. It was Ryutaro Iyo who eventually forced the ball home from right on the goal line. And we have to say it was pretty poor defending and goalkeeping from Gunma to give up the goal so late. And so close to getting a valuable point. So yeah, Akita won Gunma nil there in 13th now. Akita 8 points clear of the drop zone. Gunma are 3 points clear of the relegation zone in 16th. And we had a couple of quick questions on this game for you, James. Martin Spivey asking, despite winning this match, Akita have been pretty poor since before the Olympic break. What do we think this is down to? He suggests a lack of summer signings, plus tiredness, and also kind of a lack of exciting or explosive forwards. I think that's probably the nail on the head there for me. And Avis Badaniel was asking, could Akita's goal have been given offside? I've looked at it a few times. It looks like an okay goal to me. But yeah, any comments on these games and Martin and Daniel's questions, James? So Akita 1, Gunma nil, and Tochigi 3, Yamaguchi 2.
Akita, I think I agree with Martin. Akita have been pretty poor since the restart. But I think this win will kind of ease the nerves a bit. And I still think they'll be okay. And I think part of the reason why they've been poor is because other teams have figured out how to exploit their limitations. I think in the first half of the season, they were so solid defensively. Other teams, when they couldn't break them down, they ran out of ideas. But now I think teams have kind of wised up to how Akita play, and they've figured out how to get round them, and that's why their form has dipped a bit. Also, yeah, like you said, they don't have any particular flair players, and they don't have that much pace. Although recently they've started playing Hayate Take up front more, who joined from Toyama. He was on loan at Toyama last year, and he was very good, and he's very fast. So perhaps bringing him into the side more will start to help. But if they keep picking up points and the occasional win, I think they'll be fine. The goal seemed okay to me because it was a Gunma player who headed it back towards the goal, and then the goalie made the initial save and knocked it on basically onto Io's shin, and he kind of scrambled it over the line. That was a very. Have you seen the Twitter account Crap 90s Football? That's what I thought of when I saw this goal. Like four Akita players surrounding a sprawling Gunma goalie, with the Gunma defenders kind of watching on in horror. It was pretty funny. But Gunma, I think they'll probably be okay as well. I know they're only 3 points away, but their form since the break has been excellent. But two wins, a loss and a draw, and those results have been against other struggling teams. So what's also interesting with them is they've been doing it without Genki Ormai. I know you mentioned it in the last couple of weeks, but I looked this up before. Going into the break, he was their joint top scorer, leading assist maker, provider. He played the most minutes, even more than the goalie, and took all the set pieces, and he was the captain. So I was wondering if they were in a kind of situation like Argentina had at World Cups, where they got Messi in the team, so the players were like, or I don't know if the players or the manager's tactics were just give it to Messi, and then that Ormio, it's like give it to Genki, he'll do it, he'll make something happen, or the other players panic and they don't know what to do, and so they push it all onto their star player. And it's too much for one man. Is comparing Genki Ormai to Lionel Messi a bit a step too far?
I think physically they're both quite diminutive. That's what I was trying to dig you out of the hole. I was like, well, they're both quite short.
Not comparing the player as such, but the situation, because they do rely on him too much. And since he's not been there, the other players have had to step up and do something. And I do have a question about Gunma though, which is why does Shun Obu have pink hair, and why did he have his hair a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I have no idea, other than perhaps he's self-consciously zany and wacky.
The stereotypical kind of soccer players in Japan are a bit more fashionable, whereas, you know, the baseball players have to shave their heads and do that. Maybe he's just taking that a step too far. But he can do what he likes.
He certainly can. Yeah, he certainly can. I think what I thought was funny in the highlights is when Gunma had an early corner and the camera kind of cut to a close-up of him, and then he immediately got like a free header. And I was thinking, considering like how, you know, visually arresting his hair is, you'd think he'd be the last person to get a free header. You'd think he'd be marked very tightly because he's very visible. But still, yeah. I think that the point about Genki Ormai is well made, and it reminds me of when Stoke sold Adi Akinbai to Burnley, and everyone was really worried. But then Gifton Noel Williams stepped up, and I remember him scoring a brace in the very next game as we beat Sheffield United 2-0. But yeah, that's probably not where you thought that would go. So quick word on Tochigi. They've also been in pretty good form since the kind of restart. And you know, just on that point of kind of like the effect that one player can have on others, it's very noticeable that Yohei Toyoda, he scored his first goals for Tochigi since coming in on loan in this game, but he has really helped them to have a bit more oomph in the final third, and Junki Hata in particular has really benefited from having Toyoda around. So that kind of ties into the point you were making about the, you know, the effect that one player can have on the players around him. So do you think Tochigi are going to be okay, you know, finally, James? Or they're obviously still not out of the woods yet?
I watched this game in full, and I also watched the highlights last night to remind myself what happened. And what they didn't show in the highlight was for Tochigi's second goal, that cross to the back post and Toyoda's powering header over the flat-footed defender, that was an exact copy of something that happened a few seconds earlier. The ball was on the left, that player, the same player, crossed it in to the back post. I think it was Toyoda who jumped, but it was saved, and it went out to the right wing, and they cycled it back across to the left. And the exact same move, Toyoda scored.
I think sometimes in the kind of lower reaches of J2, this is something that I think benefits Akita quite a lot, is you sort of know what the other team's going to do, but it's not the same as being able to stop them from doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you could wonder about Yamaguchi's defending, though. I mean, that memory of a goldfish kind of thing. They just did that. They just did that exact same thing. I think Tochigi, yeah, they've got a reputation for being rough, but Yamaguchi gave as good as they got in this game. It was really entertaining, actually. I enjoyed it. And that first goal as well was interesting, because I know it wasn't a foul, but when the keeper stayed down, I was surprised that the referee didn't stop play, even though Tochigi were on the attack. And I was also surprised that after the goal was given, and you know, play continued and Tochigi scored, that none of the Yamaguchi players started haranguing the ref or the linesman, which was well, refreshing. Speaking of someone who's watched a lot of English Italian football over the years. But yeah, this was an interesting game and a really good result for Tochigi and continuing their good run. Yamaguchi's game in hand is against Kanazawa, so they'll probably be all right.
Well, that's the we'll have to wait and see, but yeah, certainly recent form suggests that may well be the case. But that looks like a nailed on 0-0 draw to me now. I don't know, but yeah, I guess we'll wait and see. Yeah, James, I mean it's very hard to kind of talk in absolute terms about the bottom half of the table right now, or the relegation zone, is it? So many permutations still with 14 rounds left to play. I think the only thing we can be certain about is the referee from that Omiya game a couple of weeks ago who disallowed two perfectly goals. I don't think he would have let that first Tochigi goal stand, would he? I think he would have disallowed that one for sure. Yeah, James, all good stuff. Thanks so much for all your analysis. It's really good to hear what you made of the weekend's action. Stay with me, James. We'll take a quick comfort break again, and then when we come back, let's look ahead to the weekend games coming up in round 29, and also these bonus midweek games that we've mentioned already. Welcome back, everyone. James is still with me, so we're just going to take a look at the weekend J2 action that's coming up. Round 29 is almost upon us, James. Most of the games will take place on Saturday, September the 11th. We have leaders Iwata travelling to Jeff Chiba, who are in 10th, and a really big game in prospect at Sanga Stadium, isn't it? Second against fourth, Kyoto hosting Ryukyu. Third place Niigata are at home to Yamagata, who currently sit 8th. This is a game that could be absolutely critical to Niigata's hopes of putting some pressure on the top two. Fifth place Machida are on the road down in Yamaguchi, who are 15th, with seventh place Nagasaki hosting the bottom, but suddenly in form Sagamihana. Other games, Mito are at home to Akita, Okayama are at home to Tochigi, and Kita Kyushu against Kanazawa suddenly looks like a big game at the bottom of the table, doesn't it? Kita Kyushu in 20th, 2 points behind Kanazawa in 17th. And also on the Saturday slate, Tokyo Verdy are at home to Matsumoto. So that's 19th place visiting 11th. In the Sunday games, September the 12th, Gunma are hosting Kofu. So that's 16th hosting 6th. And a huge game is in prospect at Ninjinia Stadium in Ehime. Ehime against Omiya, 21st against 18th, with just a single point between them. James, where should we be focusing our attentions for the weekend games?
I think there are four really big games in this set of fixtures. You've got two at the top and two at the bottom. So Niigata against Yamagata and Kyoto against Ryukyu. All four teams who've had a bit of a wobble, and they'll need to get their promotion hopes back on track. I think those ones will be interesting. And then two at the bottom, Kita Kyushu against Kanazawa and Ehime against Omiya. Massive. All four teams well into the relegation battle. And like I said earlier, Kanazawa, this is the start of a huge week. It's been a long time since they won a game, and it needs to happen sooner rather than later. Otherwise, you know, can get relegated. So I think those four are the games that stand out for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And yes, I won't bother asking you if Jeff Chiba will have any surprises in store for Iwata, because I think we both know that's highly unlikely. Yeah, all sounding good. Just real quick, James, before I let you go, we mentioned already there are some midweek J2 games coming up next midweek. I think both the games are on Tuesday night, aren't they? September the 14th. So these are games that were postponed back in the typhoon affected round 25 last month. We have Nagasaki hosting Yamagata at Transcosmos Stadium. I called this a phantom playoff battle. You know, because I think if there were playoffs this season, this will be a good kind of top six type clash. And also Yamaguchi are hosting Kanazawa, as we've mentioned. So, the sort of dark side of my nature was going to ask you what happens if Kanazawa have lost at Kita Kyushu on the weekend and lose this one. But let's end on a positive note and say that's not going to happen. So, some midweek action to look forward to as well. James, we'll definitely have you back on very soon. Promise we'll try and coincide with a thumping Kanazawa victory. But failing that, at least in a couple of weeks or a month, you know, we'll get you back on. So hopefully those two things coincide nicely. If people want to catch up with you, follow you on Twitter, it's at Kanazawa Dreaming, is that right?
That's right, yep.
Okay, yeah, all good, yes, okay. And it's not changed to Kanazawa Moaning just yet?
Not yet, but give it another, well, maybe by the end of next week.
Yeah, it's certainly a big big 7 days for Kanazawa and Yamagata, isn't it, as you mentioned. Yeah, but James, thanks a lot for your time. It's really good to finally chat with you one-on-one and to get all your thoughts and comments on the latest J2 action. So much appreciated, thanks. Yes, and please stay tuned. I think James is going back to work and so am I, but Mike Innes is going to be along shortly after a quick musical sting. He's going to round up all of the latest J3 action for you in a J Talk Short Corner. So thanks for listening, everyone, and please stay tuned. Here comes Mike with J Talk Short Corner. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone and welcome to J Talk Short Corner. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in a packed episode this week, I'll be looking back on the weekend games in round 17 and previewing fixtures coming up in round 18 of the J3 season. Before the main business, a couple of items of J3 news since the last pod. Club president Hayato Suzuki reported at a supporters' conference on the 3rd of September that Fukushima United have applied for a J2 licence for 2022, which would enable the surprise package to be promoted, assuming a top 2 finish this season. The main hurdles in the way of Fukushima obtaining the licence relate to the installation of floodlights at their home stadium and the establishing of a youth team. Meanwhile, in transfer news, Gainare Tottori have announced the signing of midfielder Meguru Odagaki, who played most recently with SV Bergisch Gladbach in the fourth tier of German club football. Odagaki, who's 24, began his career in the youth system at Gamba Osaka before moving to Germany and playing for several clubs 3 and 4 tiers below the Bundesliga. Moving on to the round 17 J3 action, there were 3 games on Saturday the 4th of September and all were distinctly one-sided. Beginning nearest the top of the table, after their shock defeat last time out, FC Gifu coach Takayoshi Anma made 5 changes to the starting lineup for his team's match at YSCC Yokohama. One of those changes saw the absence from the team sheet of top scorer Shota Kawanishi, replaced up front by Shunpei Fukahori, making his first start in a Gifu shirt on loan from Mito Hollyhock. Fukahori almost broke the deadlock in the 19th minute, sprinting through the YSCC defence and firing an angled drive past Ryosuke Sagawa, only for the ball to strike the post and bounce away. YSCC's Yumemi Kanda then hit the woodwork through a close-range shot just before the interval, and the half ended with a tremendous save by Sagawa from Yosuke Kashiwagi's free kick. In the second period, Gifu accelerated away from their opponents. 4 minutes after the restart, their mobile front line outnumbered a sluggish home defence as Ryotaro Onishi fed Leleu, whose first-time ball into the middle was comfortably dispatched by Fukahori, who's unlikely to have scored many simpler goals. In the 58th minute, it was 2-0, Tetsuya Funatsu advancing down the right-hand side and having plenty of space to pick out Onishi on the far side to finish with a half-volley. Playing on the front foot, Gifu had too much pace, movement and technique for YSCC, a point underlined with 20 minutes left when substitute Hirofumi Yamauchi raced unchallenged down the left and crossed low to the near post. The ball appeared to have been knocked past Sagawa by Fukahori, but it was eventually recorded as an own goal, YSCC skipper Kento Dorate, the unlucky defender. The nearest Gifu came to conceding was in the closing minutes, Kazushige Kirihata saving smartly following some close control and a snapshot by Onye Ogochukwu, but it finished YSCC 0, Gifu 3. This was a match in which Shunpei Fukahori announced his entry onto the J3 stage. The question is, Can Anma fit him and Kawanish into his team for the more challenging fixtures that lie ahead? Tegevajaro Miyazaki put on a dominant, if wasteful, display in their match at Vanrare Hachinohe, missing half chance after half chance. The only goal of the game came in the 15th minute when Kosuke Fujioka's shot had the pace taken off it by homekeeper Hayate Tsuta, only for the inrushing Keigo Hashimoto to bundle the ball over the line. A fifth in six matches for rookie Hashimoto. The impressive Tsuta kept his team in the game, and Hachinohe, normally so effective in front of their own supporters, almost stole what would have been an undeserved point when, in injury time, Yosuke Kamigata prodded home Tomoyuki Hirose's header, only to be ruled offside. Final score, Hachinohe 0, Miyazaki 1. At Fujieda My FC, new coach Daisuke Sudo was in charge for his first home fixture, Zdravko Zemunovic's Kamatamare Sanuki being the visitors. Sanuki keeper Takeya Takahashi had already been forced into action twice when, in the 21st minute, he pushed a Jun Suzuki shot straight to Yuki Oshitani, who scored comfortably. Suzuki, such a vital player for Fujieda this season, made it 2-0 in first half injury time, his lofted free kick drifting unimpeded in at the far post, to the embarrassment of Takahashi and his colleagues. Things were to get worse for Sanuki 2 minutes after the break when, in a quick counter-attack, Oshitani fed at Sugitoshi Oishi for a powerful low finish. Only his fourth league goal of the season, and you wonder what impact Oishi might have on Fujieda's fortunes if Sudo can get him firing on all cylinders. The victory was wrapped up with two more Fujieda goals in the last 8 minutes, as first Shohei Kawakami received a through ball and finished from the edge of the area, and then Kenta Hori's speculative long-range shot was palmed by Takahashi into the path of Daisuke Inazumi, who made no mistake. Final score, Fujieda 5, Sanuki 0. Fujieda's biggest league win since 2017, when they achieved the feat of winning 6-1 in consecutive away matches. A tremendous result for Daisuke Sudo, while Zemunovic and Sanuki can't seem to make meaningful progress up the table. On to Sunday the 5th, when leaders Katare Toyama travelled to Azul Claro Numazu, for whom forward Yusuke Imamura started for only the second time this season in place of the suspended Ryo Watanabe. And in the 6th minute, Imamura stunned Toyama, getting on the end of a high ball from Naoki Sato, advancing in on goal, cutting back in such a way as to put retreating defender Makoto Rindo on his backside, and tucking the ball neatly inside the far post. A new look, aggressive, hard-running Azul Claro appeared to have completely wrong-footed Katare, and it was almost 2-0 inside 10 minutes, Takumi Hama shooting just wide after another setup by Sato. And in the 26th minute, as a Toyama attack broke down, Numazu counter-attacked at pace and in numbers, the ball eventually coming to Sato to send in a deep cross. Junya Takahashi's header was blocked by Yohei Nishibe, but Takahashi reacted quickly to finish while the Katare backline stood still. Going two down seemed to provoke a reaction in Toyama, as moments later, Shou Hanai met Naoto Ando's cross with a well-timed shot that Ryusuke Otomo did well to push away. Otomo also got in a crucial block from the resulting corner, and Azul Claro succeeded in holding out until half-time. In the 52nd minute, though, Mateus got his first goal for Katare, turning brilliantly to receive a Nobuyuki Shina pass and crashing the ball past Otomo at the near post. If this looked like the start of a comeback, it didn't get any further than a Naoto Ando shot that Otomo got down well to save on 55 minutes. And Azul Claro saw the game out. A 2-1 win for Numazu, now 4 games unbeaten, but a blow for Toyama's promotion hopes. Waiting to take advantage of Katare's slip-up were Roasso Kumamoto, who with their less-than-compelling home form played host to lowly FC Imabari. Visiting coach Keiichiro Nuno appeared to have acted on last week's episode of this very pod, which mentioned the attacking threat of rookie defender Tomoya Ando, who at Kumamoto was fielded as the lone striker, with Valdemar starting on the bench. Ando, however, had limited impact. His teammates Takuya Sonoda and Hayata Komatsu instead drawing good saves from Yuya Sato. But the game's decisive moment came in the 27th minute when Imabari left-back Takuro Uehara failed to get close enough to Naohiro Sugiyama, who got to the byline and crossed for Toshiki Takahashi to head in his fifth of the season. And so it ended, Kumamoto 1, Imabari 0. Another low-key win for Roasso, who, without looking seriously convincing, have moved themselves into serious contention. And there were two more matches on Sunday with implications for the promotion race. In difficult conditions at Fukushima United, the hosts almost fell behind to Gainare Tottori when Yu Okubo's shot beat Kaito Yamamoto and hit the upright. But 3 minutes before the break, Fukushima went ahead, Nobuki Iketaka picking up a loose ball on the edge of the area and curling a perfect shot around Ken Tajiri and inside the far post. A first ever pro goal for the 21-year-old, and what a way to get off the mark. With 18 minutes remaining, it looked like Gainare, with only 4 points from their previous 9 games, were going to spoil Fukushima's party as Naoya Uozato battled his way into the box and beat Yamamoto from 5 yards. But Tottori are a fragile team with the worst defensive record in the division, and in the 85th minute, Kota Mori advanced down the Fukushima right and played the ball in towards the box, where it was flicked on by Shoki Nagano for Hiroki Higuchi, who sneaked between two defenders and fired past Tajiri. Final score, Fukushima 2, Tottori 1. For their tough fixture at rapidly improving AC Nagano Parseiro, Iwate Gurugia Morioka had 2 key players out through suspension in defender Yusuke Muta and perhaps the bad boy of J3, striker Brenner. Nagano went close via a Yuki Morikawa header midway through the first half, but 10 minutes before the break, it was Iwate who took the lead, Shogo Sasaki finding plenty of space to cross for Toi Kagami, who headed confidently back across goal and inside the post. The nearest the match came to a second goal came deep into injury time, when for the second consecutive game, Iwate substitute Paul Bismarck Tabinas embarked on a surging run down the right, eventually crossing for Masashi Wada, whose first time half volley hit the post with the Nagano defence scrambling to recover. The game ended Nagano 0, Iwate 1. An underwhelming display by the home team, bringing to an end their 7-match unbeaten run, while Morioka appeared assured and in control. The team with a bye in round 17 were Kagoshima United. So what does all this mean for the current league standings? The unpredictability and the closeness of the promotion race together mean it's worth taking time to look at the upper reaches of the table in more detail. In first place now are Kumamoto with 30 points. The narrow defeat of Imabari was only Roasso's second home win of the year, but that's still enough to see them climb to the top for the first time all season. A point behind Kumamoto in joint second with identical points, goals scored and goals conceded are Fukushima and Toyama. Fukushima seemed to be coping just fine following the departure of Ismaila and with the possibility of a successful appeal against their points deduction still to play out, while Toyama's loss at Numazu was a first defeat in 5 for the former leaders. And incredibly, there are also 2 teams dead level in 4th on 28 points, Iwate and Gifu, written off by some. Iwate have maximum points from their 2 games since the restart. Gifu bounce back from their home loss to Fukushima. In 6th place on 27 points, still only 3 behind leaders Kumamoto, are fellow Kyushuites Miyazaki, whose win at Hachinohe was only their 2nd victory in 7. There's then a gap to Nagano in 7th with 24 points. Hachinohe have 23, Kagoshima 22, and a game in hand. The bottom 6 are Numazu with 18, Fujieda 17, YSCC 16 and a game in hand, Sanuki 13, Imabari 12, and Tottori 11. To finish with a quick look ahead to the matches in round 18, there are three big games on Saturday the 11th of September. Toyama are at home to Nagano, both sides needing the points after losing at the weekend. There's a golden opportunity for Gifu as they host bottom-placed Tottori. Iwate make the long trip south to Kagoshima. Then on Sunday the 12th, can Fukushima make it four wins in a row? They're at home to Numazu. Miyazaki welcome YSCC, Hachinohe go to struggling Sanuki, and now with one win in the last 13 league matches, Imabari host Fujieda. The team with a bye in round 18 are leaders Kumamoto. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.